Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And spring has sprung to just kill the cliche one more time.
It's so exciting.
It is exciting. Everything smells different.
Oh, it smells good. Well, we had the doors open to the patio last night, and it was just so nice to have all that fresh, sweet air in the restaurant. Loved it.
You were just telling me you were doing some things on the farm.
And, yeah, I finally planted yesterday.
And you were handling many pounds of...
Yeah, of that. Topsoil and some other stuff. 240 pounds. That's pretty good.
Of manure.
Yeah, got to make that soil work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I planted... Oh, I'm so excited. I planted fresh English peas. So I'm excited to see those come up from seed. And I have four 14-foot raised beds that I plant in, and one of them is
Ooh,
a
four 14-foot raised beds.
Yep. And one of them is super deep for root vegetables, which I've given up on. So it doesn't produce enough. It's not worthwhile. It's not enough for the restaurant to use. So, and I don't...
Don't you eat vegetables at home?
Not root vegetables. I mean, I do, but it's just...
They're
I don't
not
know.
On your
they didn't turn out. Yes, I eat root vegetables at home, but I don't... It's just not enough. So I wanted
to
do more...
Do you eat green vegetables at home?
I do. So I wanted to really be able to have volume, you know. So I planted one of the beds almost completely with cilantro and basil, which is going to be fun to have. But that's all from seed, so I'm kind of curious to see how that goes. And then it seems like I'm heavy on herbs because I have a flat of verbena started, so I'm going to plant that. And then I have rosemary and lavender because I don't think my lavender made it through. Definitely my rosemary didn't make it through the winter. My lavender maybe made it. It's up by the barn, so it's a little protected, but I don't know. So I planted more lavender and then just a bunch of other herbs coming in. And then I'm going to go heavy on zucchinis, different types of zucchinis, and a few different types of tomatoes. And then I need to call that guy to get that groundhog removed.
The groundhog guy.
I need a guy because the groundhog comes up and takes one big bite out of all of my
tomatoes.
The
groundhog whisperer.
Uh-huh. And I need him to go live somewhere else. So and cool. All of his little friends need to go live somewhere else.
Take a journey with me.
Oh, do I have to?
No.
Okay.
But you can close your eyes for a second.
Okay.
Imagine it's a few weeks from now, and you're smelling smells in your garden.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the manure, but all the wonderful things growing. Yes. What are the first things you're going to run to grab and cook?
Well, right now, I've never worked with strawberries before, obviously, and I planted six strawberry plants.
Never planted strawberries before.
In my garden. I've worked with strawberries in the kitchen, but not in my garden. And I planted six strawberry plants last year. They all lived through the winter.
That's great.
This is a great learning. I mean, I know nothing, you know, and I'm just kind of doing, and I really probably should get some guidance. But, Bobby helps me. The guy that works my property helps me. So that's cool, but he knows everything about everything anyway. But the strawberry plants are have multiplied, you know, tenfold. So, and they're all blooming. So that's going to be the first thing I'm going to get. And I'm super excited about that. I can't wait to, you know, work with fresh strawberries. And then the verbena is going to be mature enough in a couple of weeks for sure to use that. So verbena and strawberries together will be gorgeous. And I could even just macerate them with some of the verbena. And that would be gorgeous. Or make sorbet with it. That would be a very pretty sorbet to make, fresh strawberry and lemon verbena. But yeah, that's going to be the first thing that happens out of that ground. Yeah, I mean, I know those peas are going to take a long time to... I'm hoping I will actually get peas. I had a hard time with my fava beans last year. They did really, really well, and then all of a sudden they all just kind of died on me, and I'm not really sure what happened there. But
they got sad.
Yeah, they did. And yeah, so I think the strawberries, I mean, there are a million things to do with strawberries. I love strawberries and rhubarb like everybody does. It's such a great combination, and I want to get rhubarb in, so I need to do that. And then I can have strawberry and rhubarb going together.
So what's the first?
And that's with foie gras.
The first strawberry dish you think of foie gras?
Yeah, definitely. Strawberries, rhubarb, and foie gras. I put on a bottle of port and a bottle of red wine together with star anise, just two pieces of star anise, one cinnamon stick, and probably two or three pieces of clove, depending if they've broken up or not. And I reduce that down for about 40 minutes with a little bit of sugar. And the rhubarb really kind of needs sugar, and the port isn't. The port balanced out with the red wine. What is that? What is La Ferme? Is that Cabernet? Is that what?
Mostly Grenache.
Okay. So that wine needs some sugar. And the port, we're not reducing it so much that the port really realizes too much of its sugar either. So once those spices have done their thing with the port and the red wine, I strain it and then add small dice of rhubarb, and it only takes really, literally, we could literally just pour that hot, when the rhubarb is small, we could literally just pour that hot liquid over the rhubarb and add quartered pieces of strawberries, and that would be fine. If you want to cook it a little bit longer to break it down a little bit more, you could, but literally it would only be 2, 3, or 4 minutes. And then we let that sit, and if we're not happy with the concentration of flavor or the consistency of the sauce, we again drain the fruit and then reduce that down separately until we're happy with the consistency, and then pour it back over it. And that is so good with foie gras. Actually, I'm serving that right now with quail, and off the grill, so a little smoke off the grill, a little bit
that
of
sounds
caramelization.
Nice with the slightly gamey flavor of the quail.
Mm-hmm. And we put a little bit of Banyuls reduction sauce on the plate with the quail, with the rhubarb and strawberry compote, and that's pretty fun.
So spring brings to mind all the sweet wines for you to cook with.
Yeah, and Madeira for some reason. I like to macerate strawberries in boil Madeira. Just those two things. And often I will, my go-to dessert at the farm or at my home has always been to make sablon. So that way I just use fresh strawberries or fresh raspberries and then make sablon with the Madeira.
Since first strawberries are coming, why don't you just zip off a quick sablon?
Sablon. You need about...
Or Zabaglione, either way, the recipe.
Sabayon. Traditionally, you would use Marsala wine. I do use Madeira, and I use Boal Madeira. That's one of my favorite tones for that. Let's say it's four people.
Okay.
You could do a dozen. You could do a dozen eggs. So 12 yolks for four people should be fine. And for 12 yolks, I'd start with half a cup of sugar and probably about 2 ounces of Madeira, and you just start whisking it. And what you need to do is put yourself in, you need a double boiler situation, so you need a good pot with water in the bottom, about 25%, 30% full of water. Bring that up to a boil, then turn it down so it just gently simmers. Put your bowl on top of the pot. You're going to gently cook those eggs over that heat, and you need to whisk them. Not gently, very, very, very excitingly, actually. Just whisk them hard over the...
Then thicken and actually take on some air,
and it takes a while.
Scramble.
You're whisking them to, yes, as you say, incorporate air, and it takes about 10, 15, up to 20 minutes, depending on how hot it is and how good you are at it and how long you can keep your arm going. And you want it to be nice and thick when it's done. And it is, oh, God, that is one of the best things in the world for fresh fruit, particularly raspberries and strawberries. And then just, spoon that into a bowl. You can add a little bit of whipped cream to it. That's not traditional, but it does help to stabilize it a little bit. So maybe even a couple tablespoons of whipped cream folded in to the sablon when the sablon is done. Off the heat, you can fold in a couple tablespoons, and that'll hold it a little bit longer than...
Can help keep it from weeping a little bit.
Yeah, and I typically make sablon and serve it. So if you do want to make it ahead, then you need to add a little couple.
It's certainly nice to have the berries cold and the sauce warm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not hot but warm.
Right. So that's one of my favorites.
That's great. Well, we're going to talk to a couple of other chefs today about their thoughts about spring. We're excited to have two small independent chef restaurateurs here in Baltimore join the conversation, and so we will have with us in the next segment. Chris Amendola from Foraged Restaurant.
Yeah. Yay, Chris. Excited for him.
A self-described hyper-local eatery.
And he has his new restaurant. Super excited to talk about that with him.
That's in Hamden. And Steve Monnier from Chez Hugo.
Mm-hmm.
And some different perspectives and people with some quality orientation and who I know will be excited about the season and to talk about it. Once we have that nice conversation, then we'll get to the end of things where you will have a chef's challenge.
And so will you.
I will. It'll be lovely. All of that and more on Formidable Wolf on Food & Wine. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we were just talking about them, so let's bring these two chefs into the conversation. Chris Amendola from Foraged.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
Hey, Chris. So, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us where your restaurant is and what you do there.
We are located on Chestnut Street in Hamden, and we focus on hyper-seasonal foods, which kind of is just whatever's in season at that very specific time of the year. Open for dinner 5 nights a week.
Great. And we also have with us Steve Monnier from Chez Hugo.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here.
So tell us about Chez Hugo.
So Chez Hugo, it's a French bistro located in Redwood and Calvert. We do like classical French dishes and taking everywhere, every region of France, time and places.
So you're right down by the Shakespeare Theater.
Yeah, next to the Shakespeare Theater. My business partner owns the Shakespeare Theater and the building. So
that's great.
That makes sense.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
You must be so. I've been following you on Instagram. You must be so excited. I love the space. It looks great.
Yeah, the space is great. As I said, Scott and my business partner did everything. I mean, put all the cards for us to be successful. Neighborhood is booming. And we have a great team.
That's
now
great.
It's just a matter of time and, you know, keep on focusing.
All the
and
best.
Doing a good job.
Scott is great. They're super nice people.
Yeah, and to you too, Chris. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
You've been, you know, chomping at the bit for a while to get your own place. And I'm so happy. You're the nicest. You are truly one. I don't know you, Stephen, very well, but I know this one. And you are the nicest guy in the world, man.
Thank you.
So happy for you. And you are a great chef.
You
and I have cooked together and I love your food.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So all the best to you, both of you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So let's get to the mean questions, which is my department.
Oh, boy.
Not really mean questions, but the topic we wanted to talk about was spring. Spring's the most inspiring time of the year if you're cooking, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, it is.
Everything's been gray. Everything's been gray and brown and a little wet. And a little cold and gray and brown and brown and gray, right? And then all of a sudden, there are a few inspiring things. What are the first things, and we'll start with you, Steve. What are the first things in spring that make you excited to cook?
Well, first thing, the spring, like it's, as you said, Tony, just the change of the going to roots. Well, from its flowers, everything's starting to bloom. So you get like Magnolia, Sakura, which is the cherry blossom are starting. And then, so I add that to my cuisine and I'm excited with the flour and then transitioning with the peas obviously that's coming. Maryland that has a very small period of time of spring, so it's like 2 weeks period and then we go straight to hot hot temperatures, so
it does seem
those
that
2 weeks
way.
Have to be very important.
Have to really cherish it.
Yeah, right.
Let's get the stuff in now.
Yeah, this is Chris's kind of spring. This is hyper spring.
Oh yes, yeah, definitely.
Well, I was thinking about Chris because I knew he was on fire. Obviously, he has a restaurant called Forged. He is a forager, and so what are you finding, Chris?
Oh, right now it's still a ton of ramps. Fiddleheads just got done. Morels are just now starting to pop up.
That's exciting.
Oh, yeah, it's all the good stuff.
Oh, my God. If you have extra morels, you know where I am.
I found one yesterday.
Oh, no, just one. How many, really, two.
Wait
You're
a second.
Like,
how many seats do you have?
Oh,
26
God.
Seats.
Well, one's
so
not
you
enough.
One big morel divided into 26 portions. It's the most cruel amuse-bouche of all time.
Right? What do you like to do with morels and ramps and fiddleheads?
Oh, man, morels, I just like them sautéed in butter and thyme. That's just hands down the best.
Definitely.
Ramps, oh man, anything from charred to pureed to raw, it doesn't matter, I'll eat them anyway. And fiddles, same thing, butter and thyme, just, oh my God, they're so good.
So good all on their own.
Oh yeah.
There's a fiddlehead fern thing I learned to love with buffalo milk mozzarella.
Mm-hmm.
Just charring those fiddleheads, letting them essentially cool down in really good olive oil, and then just garnishing the buffalo milk with that.
Oh man, and, that sounds awesome.
A little lemon peel and a little spritz of lemon juice and
that sounds awesome.
Completely shows off the incredibly green flavor of that fern.
Sounds great.
Well, it has the taste of asparagus and spinach.
Yeah, really well. I agree.
Yeah, we're about to get our first asparagus, tomorrow?
Oh, man,
I can't wait. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
It's 10 days late.
It's been so cold. It's been a weird spring.
I am kind of curious.
I mean, it's supposed to drop into the 70s next week, so I am curious to see what's going to happen with everything. But, I mean, what will you do with asparagus when you get it?
We're probably going to pair it with rhubarb. Rhubarb, asparagus, give some acidity and a tart, and then make a... I like to have a very simple palate, so I do like 3 flavor profile, not overpowering, and just play with acidity. So, green asparagus, so and rhubarb. Sounds about right.
That sounds great.
And then we got a great farmer. I don't know if you know John from Karma Farm. And he's getting the sugar snappies are coming. So that I'm excited.
Good.
That's early. He must be coming out of a hoop house with
those. Yeah, that's a hoop house, yeah. But it's coming, everything is blooming now. So
good. They should have flowers on those for you to play with.
Yeah, yeah. Now I play a lot with cherry blossom. I just preserved it and make kombucha. I make kombuchas and teas, and I add that to the food pairing as well. So maniola goes well with the lamb, spring lamb, and maniola. Mm-hmm.
So fish, meat, birds, what is it that you want to... And actually, let's start with Cindy. What is it that you want to eat? Not just cook, but want to eat as soon as the first warm days come.
Soft shell crabs. I mean, honestly, I grew up in northern Indiana. There was no such thing as soft shell crabs. No, I never heard of soft shells until I moved to Charleston, South Carolina.
Soft shell pork.
Yeah, and and the love that the people in this region have for them. I mean, how can you not want to cook soft shells for people? So we've been doing Colombian ají on some of our fried food, and oh God, with just no fat in the mixture. So it's jalapeno peppers, cilantro, lots of finely chopped green onion, fresh lime juice, salt and pepper, and then maybe green tomato, just to give it a little bit of acid from that way. And it's just so nice and bright and fresh with all that, And when I make soft shells, we dip them in buttermilk first. So they sit in buttermilk for probably about 10, 20 minutes, or if we can before pickup. And then they quickly go into cornmeal, all-purpose flour, a little bit of salt and cayenne pepper. And it's a very light breading procedure. We only cook them about a minute and a half at 350 degrees in a deep fat fryer. And they're just so yummy. So, I mean, honestly, that soft shells, we can't wait until we get our first soft shells. And, and then it's the asparagus and everything else. And honestly, we haven't gotten crab meat yet either. Mm. So I'm kind of waiting for that. It's a little late. We're having a very unusual season. Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, right now I'm kind of looking for both of those things.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What about you, Chris? What are you?
Oh, man. This time of year is really anything fresh, coming out of winter and braised foods and heavy foods. I want fresh and green and, vegetables and light meats. Duck. I love duck in the springtime. Stuff like that is what really I love.
What fish are you working with right now?
Right now I'm using black bass or fluke, either of the two, whatever is the nicest.
Black bass.
Oh, it's so good.
And the skin, my God, when you get that crispy, it's so gorgeous.
It's like
and
the bacon
tasty,
of the sea.
Right?
But we were getting some nice pierogies for a while. They had the nicest roe in them. It was phenomenal.
What were you doing with the roe?
We actually cured it and made bataga.
Okay.
So now I'm sitting on a bunch of that and trying to figure out
what
to use for it.
Yummy.
So.
Yeah. Pasta.
Oh, yeah.
Do you make pasta? Is that something you do?
Okay, I love making pasta.
Yeah. We just started making it at where I work, and it's just, because we have a couple of Italian restaurants, and so I've always left it to the side because I didn't want to do something we were doing somewhere else, and we got an itch, and we started making it. Oh, my God. Tony's like, why are you doing pasta there? And, we made some basil and spinach pasta the other day, and I can't stop eating it. I'm like, I'm going to gain 100 pounds. We have to stop making pasta. Fun. All right.
Steve. How about you, Steve? What do you want to eat? What do you want to cook proteins this time of the year?
As Chris said, after 5 months of getting cold, I just moved. I mean, coming from California, there is no... We eat differently. Like,
welcome to the seasons. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Going back. So, I just like... I like to go light. So, like, we're just changing the menu now. And after all the roots, heavy dishes, especially in French cuisine, it's... back in the days, protein-oriented, so we're switching to with green. Everything's going to be green from, we're going with the lamb now, spring lamb, and light it up, and going toward the summer is going to be the same, and I just,
lamb
as light
is always,
as possible.
Lamb is always what I
Yeah.
What are you I getting local lamb? Or Where are you?
We are going from Catoctin Farm.
They got some good stuff.
Yeah, they got some good stuff.
That's nice to get. Do you buy the whole animal then?
Yeah, we do. We have a butcher in home.
How do you utilize it all?
The lamb. Mm-hmm. We do like merguez.
Mm-hmm. And, so you make merguez sausage?
Yeah, merguez sausages. We're going to do a saddle, stuffed saddle lamb.
Yum.
The leg of lamb, the same. We braise it. We have a hearth, so everything on wood fire, slowly braised with a lot of herbs, sweet clovers coming, yellow and white sweet clovers. So we coat it and and just slowly grill.
So do you serve that like for an eight top?
We serve that.
Or do you?
Yeah, we have big parties.
Okay.
Like, that's what we do now. We're organizing a lot of wine. And as soon as we have big parties, family style.
Yep.
I used to do tasting at our home. Now we do like family style, big table. And I think it's more enjoyable.
Sure.
Well, the sharing is, I mean, that's what food is for, right?
It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. You know, we're all disconnected. But, you know, and I think it's just time to take some time off and just sharing, having a good time at the table or not.
I agree. People
sharing food tend to drink more wine than people who
are definitely
having little tastes.
It brings people, you know.
It's a funny thing how that goes.
Yeah, it brings a connection to the table. You know, nowadays I see all the younger generation with their phone and just like put it away and just have a good time.
Yeah. So we're on Formidable Phone Food and Wine. We're talking with two of our local chefs, Chris Amendola from Forage Deatery and Steve Monnier from Chez Hugo. Cindy Wolf and I all talking about spring food, what we're inspired to cook for spring, what is usually a compact season, probably more compact this year than ever. And so what's next? I guess that's the big question. What is the next step in the season for you gentlemen? Chris, how about you?
Oh man, all the early summer stuff, the baby squashes and
I guess it is all the baby stuff.
Yeah, all the what else? I'm still thinking about asparagus. I'm like itching for asparagus, but
I'm the only guy with Italian stuff on his brain. It's always zucchini flowers. It's
The first thing. Squash blossoms.
It's
absolutely.
It's always the first thing.
Do you stuff them?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Goat cheese and herbs. Oh man, they're so good.
Oh, that wonderful little package you can drop into a fryer and have secret stuff inside, and it's like magic.
Absolutely.
Oh, love squash blossoms.
We've made puree out of them before, and it's it's phenomenal.
Fun.
It's like this like floral kind of. It's really good.
And I like squash blossoms with fish too.
Mm.
That's a nice.
You can certainly make pesto with them.
Oh yeah.
It's an easy. Or just cut it into tiny ribbons with spaghetti alla chiara. Don't ever cook them. And then toss them with the pasta off the heat.
Mm, that sounds awesome.
And that, it's crazy. It dyes the pasta, like the colors of the flowers.
Oh, that's cool.
You see the orange running through the spaghetti.
That's very cool.
Maybe let's take a couple of minutes because we talked about your restaurants and people are hearing voices, but they don't know your story. So maybe take a minute. Why don't you start, Steve? Give us an idea of your story. What got you to Baltimore and what got you to food?
So, I was in Los Angeles for 14 years, moving from Paris, and I've done like Michelin star. Went to Los Angeles because it's Hollywood, and I had the choice between Laundry or the French Laundry. So I went to the Laundry. And my wife and I, we had Hugo, which the restaurant was named after, and she's from here. She is French, but she came here when she was 10 years old. So in order to be closer to her parents and my family there in France, we moved to Baltimore, and just as where everything started, basically. New restaurant, new different culture, season, as you said earlier. that's pretty much it, actually.
So you grew up in Paris?
Yeah, no, I grew up in France.
Champagne.
Champagne.
Wow, that's a good place to grow up. That's my dream place to grow up.
The weather in Rams to Los Angeles.
Oh my
god, that's crazy.
Yeah, that is a huge change.
You're
like, what is
that's
happening?
Why I moved to
one month, 1 month of sun to 12 months of sun.
Yeah, right. Wow. And I was like, big change. Actually, not really. And compare because I went to Paris after. So Rams, I've done my high school, and then I went to Paris working all the. Taiwan, Cardiff, and Le Laurent for 10 years, and then I moved to Los Angeles. And, I was very happily surprised with the advance of farming because we cook, but at the end of the day, we are the ending produce or the ending place starts by sourcing. So California has an amazing farming system, like Alice Waller started back in the 70s and earlier anyway.
Welcome to Baltimore. Thanks. From LA, from Paris, from Brent.
Yeah, right. It's just
that's quite a
lot of Baltimore. It's very smaller. People are, you know, I don't know any much people here, and I was lucky enough to meet Spike that introduced me to all the farmers. So it was pretty quick because I arrived here. I don't know if it was a mistake, but just opening a restaurant without knowing anything about Baltimore, the city, the people, and Spike helped me a lot to source. And then after, it's easy when you have great produce, you barely have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, what's your story?
I grew up in Florida. Started cooking at a young age, and just started traveling up and down the East Coast. I lived in South Carolina for a little bit. Worked for Sean Brock there. Ended up moving to DC. Spent a little time at staging at Minibar. Then Massachusetts. Nowhere too crazy up there. Then I lived in New York for a little while, working at Stone Barns. And then I was actually looking to move back to D.C. and found a job posting here for a place here in Baltimore. I was like, oh, I'll go check out Baltimore for a year or two. And here I am 5 years later.
Right, right.
Well, it's a livable place.
It is. It is. I really actually enjoy living here.
Me too. I never thought I would. Is where I would end up for so many years. And I love living here.
It's amazing.
So much to offer.
You get
the farming,
all the seasons.
Oh, my gosh.
The farms. It's crazy.
If you could ask farmers for one or two products, three products, that you wish we could grow well, that you had good access to, what...
The French guy has some things in his mind. Oh, yeah.
He's got a list.
He's like, I need 85 different things.
So what's on your list?
Citrus.
Citrus,
yes. Citrus, white asparagus, endive, and cron. I love cron. So it's just smaller artichokes.
Yeah.
There's so many things. I mean, in general, there is not, those products.
Maybe some truffles growing
truffle
wild.
As well. It's coming, though. It's coming. I think in California, they have a farm, San Francisco found the first black truffle, but it will come. This country has made so much improvement. It's a new country, and all the farming in 300 years, it's amazing. It's promising. In Baltimore, I mean, you can grow everything, most likely.
Well, for certain things, you know it's terroir, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And terroir and tradition.
Like
so like white asparagus.
Yeah.
For endive.
Endive.
We don't have the season for it.
No, it's true. And it's hard. It's another process to grow as well.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Michigan or somebody.
I mean, eventually it will come. It's gone.
It's amazing, talking about the need for French products. When Jean-Louis Paladin came here, I mean, he was so responsible for getting us so many of the things that we take for granted now that were nowhere. No one was growing them. Shallot, can you imagine not having shallots? And he was the one that really got people to forage for mushrooms, and he wanted chanterelles, of course. He wanted all the things that he was used to working with, and he made so many things. He paved the way for us, basically, to have the things that we really want, and thank goodness for that. And now, people have... chefs want more and farmers grow it. So what anything come to mind, Chris?
Definitely citrus. That's a huge one. Actually talking about truffles, I met some foragers a couple weeks ago that say that they're pulling white truffles out of Maryland now. And I was shocked to hear this, and I can't wait this summer to go out with them to see.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about foraging. Tell us kind of what's your deal.
It started as a hobby, just kind of, I always loved being in the woods, and I always loved mushrooms. And a few years ago when I was living in Massachusetts, I met the head forager for the Momofuku group. And he had taken me out a couple times and kind of showed me.
The head forager?
Yeah.
The leader of the foraging organization?
And so it just kind of sparked my interest. And then after that, it was just countless of hours by myself in the woods, wandering around, looking for things, looking at microclimates and...
And how do you know if it's okay to eat?
Oh, man.
You practice on yourself?
I hate that and
Chris.
A lot of research.
No, we need you forever.
No, if I even second guess it, I won't even touch it.
Of course.
I won't even until I learn more about it. And so I stick with the ones right now that, I know chanterelles and black trumpets and morels, so.
What resources do you use to check things out?
A lot of field guides, spore prints, asking other foragers, and just trying to get as much information about it as I can.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
So I'm going to ask you the question that I can't help but ask because I can't think of wine and food separately. So the wine in spring with what you're cooking, what do you want?
White wines, absolutely. Yeah. White Burgundies, Gewurztraminers, anything with that high acidity and fresh.
Yeah.
Rosé,
yeah.
Rosé.
You're talking Tony's language.
Yeah.
He always starts talking about rosé this time of the year.
Yeah.
But Chardonnay, just something refreshing, acidic.
for Italian whites, this is one of the most fun times of the year because all of those first vegetables are strong. Mm. Asparagus, artichokes, and a bit bitter, and they don't do well with an awful lot of wines from around the world. But with certain things in Italy, like Suave Classico or Trebbiano, if they're well made, they can do incredibly well.
What else are you thinking about, Tony?
Middle European grapes. So really, really pretty, because you also have delicate flavors too. I mean, if you're cooking flowers, I want something that's not going to overwhelm it. A big Chardonnay is going to overwhelm it. But something really beautifully made, Molo Thurgau from the Alto Adige, or Grünwaldliner from the Wachau in Austria. Those are things that are really bright, precise. The alcohol is not too high. It's not going to crush. You know, if you're making a salad with morels or something, white Burgundy is great, but that wants all the butter and the veal stock. And, you know, that's a white that can have the power to clean that sort of stuff up. But what you're showing off is the delicacy and the greenness of something. You need to have something that can handle the intense greenness without changing the wine and still not dominate the dish. Mm. So that's usually what I look for at this time of year. Well, it was great to have you guys
on. Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for
having us. It was fun to talk with you.
And so, absolutely.
And enjoy your spring.
And let guests know how to find you. You're for Chez Hugo, Steve Monnier, your website is?
It's chezhugobistro.com.
Okay.
And you're also on Instagram.
Chez Hugo.
Okay.
And for you, Chris?
And website is forgedeatery.com and social media, forge.eatery.
Mm-hmm. Good. Follow these guys.
Yeah, and
they're
please support these local restaurants.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, yes, Cindy, we're going to get to the hard part, as promised. The
Chef's
Challenge.
Actually, Chris helped me with yours, Tony. So.
That's great. I'm sure he put some wacky stuff on there. You can't put things you find in someone else's yard on my Chef's Challenge.
Yes, you can.
It's all the fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff.
Chris,
all
of that. Chris is my ace in the hole.
all of that and more on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. This is Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
That was fun.
I'm glad those guys are here.
Ah. It's interesting because it just stimulates you thinking about other food that you want to cook.
Sure.
It certainly does to me.
Two minds are always better than one. Four minds are certainly better than one. I think that's the fun thing about talking about food is hearing what other people want to do, think, and are inspired by that, and playing ideas off of each other.
Now, I can taste the fresh spaghetti with zucchini flowers and a little bit of fresh made rigotta as a garnish on that guy. I'm going to be upset until I make that.
And it sounds good, Tony. And I do love, you know, we were talking about squash blossoms, you know, stuffing them. I mean, they really do form this like perfect little, you know, package for something. And Chris said goat cheese. I do the same thing.
The perfect package for bumblebees, by the way.
Yeah, they sleep in. You told me that they sleep in there at night. And so when I first had them come up in my garden, I'm like, oh, are there any sleeping bumblebees? And there were.
Yeah. Like, if you put them in the fridge. They get cold, they slow down, they won't sting you. You can just kind of shake them out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and there's another kind of bug that likes to, I don't know what those are called, but they like to be in there too. So you just have to watch out for that. So we always open up each squash blossom, make sure there aren't any bugs in there. And then I make a mixture of, let's just say for 4 ounces of goat cheese, 1 egg yolk, and a little bit of salt and pepper, and then kind of whatever herb you like. I like a little bit of fresh rosemary, and that can be overpowering, so you really only want just a tiny bit, but even rubbing a little bit in your hand, but thyme would be good. There are many chervil, chives. Actually, I do chives too, and chives are nice because it gives that bit of oniony, garlicky flavor without adding that to it. And I'd go with chives over anything, and just mix that together, salt and pepper, and And then you can put it in a, you can buy plastic piping bags. And they're kind of the best because you can cut the tip to be any size you want. And so then you can just, you know, the mixture obviously needs to be room temp, soft to work with, and just pipe it into the blossom and then, you know, close them up around that mixture. And we put them in batter and fry them and deep fry them. And they're just the best. One of the best things.
They can be very easy to consume very many of.
Yeah,
what they
right?
are.
Right.
What else do you want to be cooking? What else are you excited about? What else did you not get to say that is on your brain? Spring lamb, is that
oh my gosh.
Working on
I
you?
Love lamb so much. And American lamb, you know, can be quite expensive, quite frankly. And so I really think that with the fact that it's spring lamb, one, if you can afford to buy a whole animal like we were talking about, it really is incredible. I mean,
or,
it doesn't produce
say,
that much
or
food.
Say a leg at least.
Yeah. With the spring lamb, I'll never forget. We started to talk about that Stephen had worked at Carré de Fouillon in Paris, which is crazy because you and I have been eating there for 20 years. And the first time we ate there, we had baby lamb. And I remember when it came to the table, and at first I was just shocked at how tiny it was, the rack, and how little the bones were. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just, and it was, and then
this
when
is
I,
baby lamb.
It's really baby lamb. And when I went to cut into it, it was well done. And I initially was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is well done. I want, you know, I don't eat my lamb that way. I want it medium rare or medium, closer to medium, quite frankly. And, but it was as tender and delicious as it could have possibly been. So I think, you know, that is a lesson in that, you actually can cook something sometimes a little bit more than you would normally want. But with the baby lamb, I think that if you do a leg, you know, you really want to season it well, you know, just rub it with salt and pepper. Again, it's sort of your choice. Do you want thyme on there, maybe a little rosemary? But whatever, you don't have to put anything on there other than salt and pepper and a little bit of oil. Corn oil is what I would use. But if it's still bone in, you know, really cooking it gently at low heat, maybe cooking it at 325 and, you know, really keeping an eye on it, maybe backing that temperature down partway through so that it can cook long and slow. You certainly don't have to cook it all the way through. I wouldn't, but I would definitely aim for medium. But that leg of lamb will probably be one of the best things you'll ever eat. I mean, a young lamb is really quite delicious.
Yeah, all I'm thinking about is lamb cooked à la ficelle, where you dig the fire in the ground or dig the pit to build a fire in the ground and do a little teepee where you hang the the marinated lamb leg
from
a big heavy string over that and cook it slowly.
The wood smoke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then make a gigantic asparagus salad, you know, with a vinaigrette with fresh mint and tarragon. And
you don't want acid in there. That's the thing.
Lemon peel and...
Well, okay. Yeah.
You don't need much.
Well, because if you do put acid in there, it will turn the asparagus colors. It will lose its vibrancy. I mean, it will taste good, but I know that, you know, or if you do it, just do it right at the last moment.
Exactly.
But lemon peel is going to be less invasive.
Exactly.
So.
But yeah, that and first new potatoes all in that salad for mm-hmm. the lamb. I'll just shave me a little slices off the hot lamb for that cool salad.
Yeah, and the another nice thing is English peas, you know, coming in, and peas and lamb are that perfect combination. So a little bit of, you know, quickly blanched peas with butter and, you know, maybe a little bit of chiffonade of mint or not. But yeah, and then, you know, or maybe you are, you know, adding a little bit of creamy polenta to the plate or something like that to give some richness. And but with lamb, you know, again, talking about doing something very simple, just a little bit of extra virgin olive oil on it after it's sliced or lamb and olives are very, very good together. You know, you could scatter some Niçoise olives or...
Lamb and a really big, fat, fantastic glass of Châteauneuf de Pape are good together.
That is true. Yes, that sounds very good to me. Yeah. Oh. Yes, and garlic and, you know, rosemary and, yeah, all those things from that region are so perfect for lamb.
So now that we've got you happy...
Uh-huh. No, you're going
first. I'm
going
to give you this
instead. You're going
first.
Here. No, Tony. Here you go.
Oh.
And so Amendola did add something, but I actually removed one of them because it didn't seem right. I should have left it on there.
Okay. Ramps, asparagus, tarragon, chives, chervil, onion, shallot, morels,
Violets.
Violets. I'm like,
that's
what?
That's Chris's. Chris put that on there.
Watercress, olive oil, chicken.
See? So it's all nice.
Okay.
I'm glad he added the morels.
Yeah. It's funny. We're just talking about making a hot dish and a cool salad. What I want to do is marinate and roast the chicken and olive oil with the shallots, long and slow. I'm going to pound it, not pound it, I'm going to flatten it a little bit before I roast it. So do essentially pollo al mattone, where you bone out part of the chicken, you leave the drumstick in, you leave the wing joint in, you season the inside, you double the guy over, you put it between two hot cast iron pans, get it crisp on the range top, put that guy in the oven to finish. And both the top and the bottom be crispy that way. Mm-hmm. And while that finishes, you're going to make a dressing and you're going to make a salad. The asparagus and morels are going to be a super salad.
Definitely.
The morels, you want to clean them up as best you can with a brush. Roast them for a bit with some of the shallot and maybe some of the chives once they come out of the oven. Mm-hmm. Would love to go. Maybe I can go forage for some thyme somewhere. But that's always what I want from morels. But yeah, I want to do a really pretty composed salad with the asparagus, the morels. Dress it in a little bit of the olive oil. Even if it's extra virgin, cut it to make it a little bit lighter to show those things off. Last moment, you're going to toss in watercress to make it a little bit spicy. A little bit of the tarragon as well. The ramps, I actually want to grill them for just a moment to begin to get some of that garlicky intensity out of them and then puree that and then go in the olive oil with that, strain that, lots of fresh herbal, and then when the chicken comes out, brush that guy with that puree and garnish with the violets and we're all done.
All right.
They're all done. Everything is done except for the drinking of the nice Moulin au Vent, the nice Cru Beaujolais with it.
Moulin au Vent.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Here we go. No one put anything crazy on there.
sea scallops, ramps, garlic, yellow onion, leeks, tarragon, rosemary, golden beets, head-on shrimp, Jerusalem artichokes, spinach, ginger, salice iberico.
Salchiche iberico.
Salchiche iberico.
Sausage from an Iberian pig.
Okay. Well, that needs to be thinly sliced. And I think the Jerusalem artichokes, I'm going to peel them, slice them, and fry them in corn oil. I'm going to slice them very thin and make little, like, chips. And I will roast the golden beets in the oven with corn oil, a little bit of salt and sugar on them, and take off their skins when they're done, quarter them, and so I have that. So those three things, and I'm going to make a salad with that. So they're roasted golden beets, the chips, the spinach, and the Iberico ham all together with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, and I'm going to actually fry some of the leeks, both the white part and the green part, julienne them, fry them very quickly in a little bit of corn oil, toss them in a little bit of salt when they come out, and garnish that spinach salad with that as well. The chips can kind of just sit in amongst the greens, and I would lay the ham out on the plate and cover the whole bottom of the plate and put the salad on top. With the shrimp, head on shrimp and scallops, I'm going to make a dish together with that. And so I'll saute the shrimp and make a little oil with the ginger and some of the tarragon. No, that's weird. Ginger and some of the leeks and the onion.
I like where you're going with that.
Mm. So the ginger, I'll just kind of, you know, chop it and fine and have it in corn oil is fine at this point. A little bit of a small dice of the onion and garlic and the leeks and saute that and add the shrimp, put all that together. work that together in the pan. The great thing about the shrimp, you didn't give me any stock or anything, but I'll use
but they're whole heads on.
Yeah, so I can deglaze the pan with, well, I need some sort of liquid, so I'll just pretend you gave me white wine.
Of course, I'll deglaze
the pan with white wine. Now you've got this great sauce working. On the side, I'm going to sear the scallops in another pan so they get seared nicely on both sides, cooked to medium rare with a little bit of salt, and then everything comes together as one dish. So I'll put the scallops in the center of the dish, have the head-on shrimp coming, sitting up in the air on the scallops, and then just have that beautiful sauce all around.
Sounds nice.
Okay.
I think the ginger's a nice accent with those guys.
Yeah, it'd be pretty.
Yeah, I liked your dish. I mean, you know what everyone's excited about this time of the year, right?
No, what?
Rosé.
Oh, yeah. So why don't you tell us about it?
Do you drink rosé?
No, I don't. No.
Do you like rosé?
Yeah.
Not just rosé champagne, but...
Oh, well, I love rosé champagne. I just don't drink rosé. I don't think to drink it. It doesn't occur to me. So what is rosé? What is rosé? What's the big deal?
There are a couple of different ways that it's made. The most common way is rosé de Saunier, which literally means that Saunier is French for bleed. When you're making a red wine, you will remove some of the juice that's just begun to color. It concentrates the red wine a little bit more, and it gives you that very charming, you know, that very charming, nice to drink cold, a wine that has a light personality, you know, just an easy, bright, and depending upon the red grapes that it's coming from, it has more personality, more fruitiness, or less, or if that makes
sense. Is there a group of grapes?
And I mean, in the south of France, probably the most famous come from Grenache and Mourvèdre. That gives you a lot of those very strawberry-scented, light, bright, a little bit minerally rosés there. If you look to Spain and Rioja, you see maybe a little bit firmer rosé from Tempranillo there. One of my favorite things in Italy is you get a variety of things. Bardolino, there's a Chiaretto, the Bardolino, which literally means it's just colored Bardolino. That comes from usually around the lake regions. That's super bright and charming and easy, way too easy to drink too much of. And further south, you see wines from Cerasuolo. Cerasuolo, there are a couple of different Cerasuolo made from different grapes that usually are bigger, punchier, are actually rosés that can take, can deal with that lamb we're talking about, or the chicken from the Chef's Challenge, that kind of thing. Well, that's all we have time for. Thanks for listening to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. If you want to download this program or any other of our podcasts, you can go to the WYPR website, wypr.org, look for the Form and Wolf page, and voila, there's a whole list of them for you. If you want to contact us via email with questions, comments, anything we can address for you, it's formandwolf@wypr.org. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
On Instagram, I'm the real Tony Foreman. Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.